You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is Dan Rowlands and I'm joined once more by John Townley for our midweek catch-up on all things Aston Villa. John, how are you, mate? You okay?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks, Dan. Long weekend, Tuesday now. Next game in 6 days, Monday night. Mm. It's going to come thick and fast over the next few weeks before the World Cup, isn't it? So it's, busy time for us especially.
Mm. Yeah, it's freezing in my house, hence the big woolly jumper for anyone who starts to mug me off in the comments. But it's lovely and warm. The house is cold and I'm waiting a call from British Gas to come and check out the boiler and stuff. So if I have to nip off at some point, that's where I've gone to. We'll get a bit of housekeeping in early doors before we get into Leeds and kind of general goings on at Aston Villa. We're doing a phone-in show on Thursday or Friday where for the first time fans can send in videos of themselves or voice notes to a WhatsApp phone number, which I'll put on screen in a bit when I actually work out where it is, and fans can send us a message. We've already had 6 or 7 of people asking us questions or giving their opinions on what's going on with Aston Villa. So you can send a voice note or a video of yourself to the following number, which I'll put up on screen in a second: 07920 245162. Send us a voice note or a video and we'll put your thoughts on the podcast to you, John, or Ash or Matt or whoever's with me in a couple of days. John, you were at Leeds on Sunday afternoon, which was, you know, if you've still managed to wake up from the boring afternoon, well, some of it wasn't boring. How was it? What was your general kind of overview of the performance?
To be honest with you, I don't think it was actually as bad as what a lot of people were making out to be. I think there was a lot of sort of mass hysteria after the game. Maybe that's just social media in general. But I didn't think we were that bad in terms of going to Leeds and getting a result. We were literally an Ollie Watkins goal away or a Coutinho goal away at the post. Watkins missed, what, like 3 or 4 chances. We were 1 goal away from winning the game. That's what Gerrard said after at full time too. So it's difficult, but then it's fine margins, isn't it? When we're sort of lingering at the bottom of the table, you can't really have the excuse of, oh, what could have been. We drew the game 0-0 to 10 men. So, and it's a Leeds team that are tipped by many to get relegated. I just looked at the odds and stuff for relegation and whatnot, and Leeds are backed by quite a lot of people to go down, which surprised me a little bit because they did start quite well, winning against Chelsea and getting a few good results, and they beat Wolves as well. But no, massive opportunity wasted. You can't really gloss it up any other way. I think, again, we had a game plan. I struggle to really, I don't know, I think Gerrard said before the game that he'd be happy to take a point. We go to a place that we just won, we won 3-0 there last season, didn't we, at Elland Road. I don't know why we have to kind of put the handbrake on so much sometimes, but I'd understand it if we then come away with a 1-0 or we just win 2-0. And yeah, a big factor of that would have been the red card, but it's a results-based business at the moment. We need results because come the World Cup, we have, what is it, 7 games left. If you're not beating Leeds with 10 men and we go to Forest and we don't win, we have no right to beat anyone, in my opinion, because Leicester are now sort of turning a corner. It doesn't look like we have turned a corner, although you get good results against City and Southampton. The performances aren't up to scratch, are they? You can limp through some games, but in the Premier League, you'll get found out. So at the moment, yeah, we're sort of just going along, aren't we, with it? But that'll come to bite us come the end of the season, I'm sure.
Just want to also clarify a point that I made in the post-match debrief where I said, we might as well just lost Southampton and beat Leeds and we'd have had more points. And somebody said, well, we beat Southampton and drew to Leeds. That's 4. Losing 1 and winning 1 would have been 3. In my head, for some reason, I just got Southampton as being a draw for some reason. So you might as well have lost one of the draws and got a win instead. It's kind of a lot making of the unbeaten thing, isn't there? You know, you could be unbeaten in 4 and have 4 nil-nil draws. You could win 2 and lose 2 and you'd have more points. That's the point I was trying to make. It's unbeaten is kind of irrelevant. I want points. So however they come is what you go for. I said as well, I always just feel like if you're playing against 10 men, you should win just by default. I don't know whether that's oversimplifying it because they can obviously sit in and play a 4-4-1 or whatever and make it difficult and hard to break down, which is what Leeds did do. I think Ezri Konsa said something similar, that when you go and play against 10 men, you do think, well, this is, you know, the onus is on us now to go and take some points. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can caveat it and say Leeds away is a difficult place to go and whatever you want to claim it is. But I do just think you play pretty much the whole second half against 10 men with the quality that we've got and the wages that we pay and the money that we've spent. That team should be capable of beating Leeds, and that feels disappointing, frustrating, and annoying, whatever adjective you want to go for.
Yeah, I think the point you make there, Dan, about it's harder to win. I mean, potentially, but then you're not going to lose the game. So, or we shouldn't be losing the game. So that's where you get with 10 men. Yeah, I spoke to Conter after the game and he was as frustrated as what any other player would be, I suppose, in the Villa team. But particularly because he had, for me, I thought Conter was brilliant. He was my man of the match. He didn't really put foot wrong. I don't think he has for the last few weeks either. But obviously, being a defender, we've suddenly started to keep a clean sheet or two. We are more defensively secure. But JR just can't find that balance between keeping the ball out of the net and then putting it in the net on the other end. So, where are we going at the moment? That's my point. It's one thing not having necessarily that identity yet or that sort of implemented style. But then if we're not even being effective in the way that we're trying to play, which is sort of, you know, a low block and absorbing pressure, game management and trying to get a goal on a break or out of a set piece, that's what we're playing for at the moment. And we're not doing that. It looks bad. And that's where we are, unfortunately, especially when it's 10 men against Leeds. It almost sort of amplifies it because Leeds will just sit in. And they were really happy to take a point. I was a little bit surprised that the fans were so pleased at full time to get the point. And I get they were up against it. Maybe it was just me or us being Villa fans and we probably knew we weren't going to score. So it was almost like a, you know, why, I don't know, why you're so cheerful after only getting a point against Villa at home. But I guess they're down to 10 men. So, but no, yeah, it's... you're kind of just scratching your head at the moment. Where are we going? I think is the main sort of takeaway from the last few games for me.
I've done podcasts here and fan channels before I started working and used the title of something we've used today. You know, what is going on at Aston Villa? What's happening at Aston Villa? What's going wrong at Aston Villa? I feel like I've used that 5 or 6 times over the last couple of years because there's always a point during a season where you go, what are we doing here? What are we trying to do? What is the aim? What is the ambition? And you know, pose those comments to the Villa Trust meeting or the fans group meeting or whatever it was, kind of saying you know, the style of play or the identity is a work in progress. That worries me a little bit. Four years back in the Premier League or 3 years back in the Premier League,
yeah.
A year of Steven Gerrard now, kind of, you know, we have the summer going here, we're going to spend this amount of money, we're going to push for next season, we want to finish in the top half. Players like McGinn coming out on TalkSport saying we want to upset the European clubs at some point, whether you know that's this season or not. To say then 8 games in, well, you know, what we're trying to do is a work in progress. I kind of think, what have we been working on for the last year, yeah. For the last 2 or 3 years? What is the progress? Because at the moment, you watch us play boring football, scraping 1-0 wins at home against Southampton, getting over the line for a 0-0 at Leeds. And if it wasn't for John McGinn at the end of that game, to be fair, we'd have lost against Leeds as well. That was a great block from him, a great challenge. So I kind of look at those kind of comments and think, what is the progress? What is the work in progress? Where are we headed here?
Yeah, I think those comments could be applied after we lose Jack Grealish and a player that's so instrumental. But in the summer, all we've done is add 2 quality players in Kamara and Carlos. And admittedly, yes, they're injured. But Gerrard is now working with the same team that he's been working with for, 4 or 5 months prior to this season starting. So to say after nearly 12 months from his appointment that it's a work in progress, that is one way of just admitting that it hasn't gone as...
That's basically saying, well, the last year has been a waste, is how I interpret it. And this season, if it doesn't go on to be a top 10 finish, let's say, if we finish 13th and it dribbles out into a damp squib ending of a season, it's another season of wasted. This season, wasted last season is how I would see it. I understand it's not it isn't Football Manager, which I'll talk about in a sec. Someone notes for later, and it can't just be done overnight, and you just suddenly change everything, and it's all rosy. I understand it is a progress thing that it does take time, but it's been a year of Steven Gerrard now, and I don't know if we're any better now, approaching October, November 2022, than we were in October 2021.
Well, we're not. Let's be real, we're not better than what we were. If anything, we have gone backwards because we were winning at Palace and we lost there this season. We beat Brighton and look where Brighton have gone since Potter. And you know, obviously, there doesn't seem to sort of be like the wheels are falling off there after Potter's left, after the Liverpool result. But no, it's difficult. I mean, Gerrard said himself, and I kind of respected the honesty when he mentioned that he's sort of stripped it back a little bit, taken out a bit of creativity and sort of played for results. And that's fine by me because we know this season so far hasn't gone well at all and we need to get results. Because as I say, by the World Cup, if we're not winning more than 2 games, we're probably in that relegation zone. And that's a massive problem because then they're going to come thick and fast after that, after December. So, you know, again, where are we going?
Just on that break as well, after the international break, and it's, you know, we had the postponement for the Queen's death as well. I kind of come back from that international break, and I've been away on holiday as well, so I kind of switched off from everything Villa. I didn't really keep up with anything, and came back thinking, right, I know some players have gone away on international duty, quite a few players, to be fair. We've had a few injuries to Carlos and Kamara. Martinez had a few niggles, didn't he, as well, before the break, and you kind of think, well, you know, we'll kind of see what happens. But I'm also half expecting to go, we've had 2 weeks, let's maybe see a couple of exciting new set pieces, or come out with a bit of intensity and go, oh, okay, that's what's been worked on in this last 2 week period. But I've kind of watched the whole of the Leeds game and gone, we look the same as we did before the break. So what have we worked on? We can see as many videos as we like on social media from banging in goals on the training ground, but that's not a match day environment. It's one thing to be good in training, but I want to see them be good on a match day. And again, I've not really seen much in the entire season so far, by the Man City game, which is probably our best performance. I've not seen anything to go, oh yeah, we worked on this in the summer, and we worked on this in the international break, and we'll work on that in the World Cup break. It's kind of just meandering from game to game, going, well, we'll see what Villa turns up today. I'm not quite sure what it'll be, but it probably won't be exciting.
But during that international break,
that's
as well,
a grim place to be, isn't it? I'm not even looking forward to games now.
During that international break, you had Coutinho at Baltimore Heath, Douglas Luiz at Baltimore Heath. Admittedly, we had again a few injuries to Luka Dean and Kamara during that, but it's not working with nobody during the break. It's that was almost like a 2 week camp, wasn't it? Baltimore, let's get back together, let's regroup. Leeds and Forest coming up, and again we are working on fine margins, because if we get that one goal, then we do get a result, and admittedly a point against 10 men and against Leeds isn't good enough. So against Forest, to me, that's a must win. You need a minimum was 4 points out of these two games coming up. But you're right, Dan, we haven't seen anything in the performances to suggest that we're sort of moving or progressing in the way that we need to. I wonder if Gerrard's target the next 7 games is almost mini block before the World Cup, is let's get the results, or let's get as many points as we can on the board to climb the table as much as possible. To do that, we're going to go back to sort of basics as we've seen against City and Southampton.
Is that work in progress though, going back to the basics after a year?
But I do think that, no, it's not. But then we've got to be real. Like where a couple of weeks ago when we were losing to West Ham and Arsenal, I think there was a serious question that would have been asked if we then lost to City and didn't win against Southampton and then come up against Leeds and didn't win. We would be in the relegation zone, wouldn't we? So he's probably targeting these games, is what I'm saying, up until the World Cup. During the World Cup is then where you've almost got a pre-season with a bunch of players that, because they've been underperforming for reason X, Y and Z, they're probably not going to go to the World Cup anyway. So that's almost his regroup time, and whether you like it or not, that's where we're at. And it's almost like what can Neil Critchley do as well? Because we've obviously had the Michael Beale thing, who Gerrard leaned on very heavily. It's all kind of fallen to pieces a little bit since then. Now it's almost Critchley's turn for pre-season, because during the actual pre-season, obviously it wasn't allowed in Australia, or you know, passport issues or whatever it was. So that, in my head, is where I'm at with Gerrard in terms of, I'm thinking he's having the next, what is it, four weeks, to get as many results as he can to, you know, keep his job secure, keep the players on the side, let's move at the table if we can, and then that's his opportunity to sort of bed in his philosophy or what identity he wants to bring. However, that isn't, you know, let's be honest, that isn't good enough. We've had 12 months and here we are, we're back to square one. But to me, that's my summary. That's where we're at.
Yeah, on the Beale thing, it's, again, I've said before about no excuses, and I'm not going to give excuses, but obviously losing an assistant is going to make an impact. But you look at sides like Brighton or Brentford who lose managers and carry on as if nothing's happened or get better. So for us to lose an assistant manager shouldn't really affect us that much, to be honest, and I just want to see more from the players that we've got. I was going to make a point about something whilst you were talking there, and I've totally forgot what it was, so I'll just move on. 7-2 against Liverpool was 2 years ago today. I was reminded when I first started up this morning, 7 o'clock, going through my emails, doing a few bits and pieces, preparing for this and some social posts. And I was Googled, as I always do, the date and Villa to see if there's anything to go back to. And I saw that 7-2, watched the highlights, and I thought, the glory days, the good times. We obviously weren't in the stadiums, but what a moment that was. The podcast that came after it, all the stuff we were doing after it, riding the wave of a great start to that season. If you'd have said back then, from 2 years on, Dean Smith won't be here, Jack Grealish won't be here, you'll have Steven Gerrard, you've had a pretty average 2022 as a whole, and you'll be starting this season with a point per game and sitting down to do a podcast titled What Is Going Wrong at Aston Villa, I'll be going, what happened? Why haven't we cooked on? Why aren't we in the Champions League from 2 years now? Why aren't we in the Europa League for 2 years from now? Did you think, if you look back with the benefit of hindsight, should we have pushed on more in the last 2 years than we have?
Yeah, I mean, you'd expect so. I mean, progress isn't always linear, so it's difficult to sort of say next season we get top half and the season after that, which would be this season, is, you know, bash on the door of Europe. Again, I think we lost Grealish, and that's a massive, you know, whether you like or not, that's a massive, that was a massive blow, sorry. And the investment after that, we've seen Danny Ings bought for £30 million and he can't really get a game because we already have a striker in Ollie Watkins. Leon Bailey has shown glimpses, but he barely played last year. And Emi Buendia can hardly get a game. So that's a replacement for one of the best players in the Premier League. So it's, when you put it like that, for me, I'm not surprised that we're not near seventh at the moment, you know. But if you ask me, as you say, 2 years ago, should we have improved? Then yes, of course. I think losing Grealish, again, you must excuse that season afterwards. But then the season after that was then a year to really push on and get the recruitment right. And so far, that hasn't really worked. And again, we've had a couple of injuries. Of course, we have. But those injuries have happened to two defensive players. And we can't get the balance right. We're not scoring enough goals. I think I forgot how many teams have scored less than us, but it's not very many. I think it's only two. Is it West Ham and someone else?
Wolves, potentially.
Maybe. Wolves could be a shout, yeah. So it's bleak after those 2 years being Liverpool 7-2. I feel like we could beat Liverpool 7-2 this season, to be fair.
I think the stat I saw somewhere is that we scored more goals in that game than we have all season so far.
Yeah.
I think we scored 6 goals this season. One goal in the last 2 goals in the last 3. 1-0 with Man City, 1-0 Southampton.
You got anything positive to talk about?
Not really, no. This is the podcast, mate. Welcome back to the Clubby Podcast. West Ham and Wolves are the only sides to score less than us from AVFC Stato there. Thank you, AVFC Stato. There's loads of comments, and we'll get to them as we go through. Mark, scoring goals is a major concern, and this is the point I was going to make a couple of minutes ago. We're talking about getting results as quick as possible. One from Steve here. Getting as many results as possible is what we should be thinking at all times, not just because the World Cup is looming. Lose at Forest and a change at the top will be needed. Get Poch in, and we'll come to managerial stuff later. But just quickly on that, I understand the going back to the basics thing and being pragmatic and, you know, getting the clean sheet first as a kind of base to progress forward. But it's one or the other, isn't it? We either score goals and we're in games that are 2-2 or we're throwing points away and we look shaky, or we get a clean sheet and we can't hit a barn door. And it's not even for the lack of making chances, because we've had a few against Leeds. And if you do win that game 2-0, it's a totally different podcast on Sunday and it's a totally different podcast today. And we're looking ahead to Forest going, they got battered on Monday night. We should go there, get 6 points out of the 2 games. Happy days, move on to Chelsea, see what happens there. We go on a bit of a run. But we're looking at it going, we can either score or we can keep a clean sheet. We can't do both. And I kind of understand getting that clean sheet because it is a basis, but not throwing out all the attacking intent and all the attacking play at the same time. You've got to have a balance of both, which is, I don't think we can do.
And it's one of those where, again, it's a results-based business. We keep saying it, but if we're not getting those results, that's one thing. But even if we are getting those, if Coutinho did score that goal or Ollie Watkins didn't slip over on his arse and miss like an open goal afterwards, I still have the same feelings of, okay, we've won that game, but we can't do that every game. We're not going to win. I don't know how to put it.
It's not sustainable. We've said it before.
That's my point about why I think Gerrard is treating these next 7 games as a, let's go back to basics and let's try and get as many points as we possibly can. Then we will treat December as a pre-season or November or whatever it is. That's just my thoughts. And I'm not saying that's good enough. It really isn't. But that's where we're at the moment. I don't think, you know, if we were turning up to Leeds and we kept a clean sheet and we played fluid attacking football, I'd be shocked, because we're not in that position. We're not in that place at the moment. We just aren't. And it will, under Gerrard anyway, that will take another portion of time, because we're so far away from that. He said himself, there's loads and loads of work to do. That's after 12 months of being in the job. So whichever way you look at it, it's not great. And it's not ideal. It's poor, if anything. But that's just where we are. We have 7 games left until that break, and we need to get results. We really do, because if we don't, then we will be in trouble. And every decision that comes after that will be made harder by that, if that makes sense. You know, wherever you are, I know the fan base is quite torn, or maybe not even torn at the moment, but we all need those results, because the job just gets a whole lot harder in the second half of the season, whoever or whatever decisions are made. Yeah, it's difficult. But at the moment, yeah, it's obviously not good enough.
We'll talk about strikers in a sec. The feeling I've got that I noted down before we started this was similar to a transfer window, and this is from a work perspective. I don't know whether this will apply to fans that are watching, but to me, the managerial situation is the same as transfer window. And it's about that feeling of being on a knife edge all the time. I don't know, you'll have experienced this. I'll try and explain it as best I can. In a transfer window, and you've got 90 days of the window being open or whatever it is, every single day that you work in, you're thinking something could happen at any time here. There could be an announcement, there could be a signing out of the blue, there could be an interview with the manager, anything could drop at any moment. And you're always kind of looking at your phone, even when you're not on shift, going, well, if something happens now, I need to go and do a podcast or I need to do a social post or whatever it is. And you're always kind of wary of, right, but I don't normally post stuff on social media after 8 o'clock. So I'm probably all right to settle down for the night now because nothing will happen. Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way about the managerial position, that when we win a game, it's like, okay, kind of settle down for a bit now. He's not going to be sacked now because we've just won a game. If we lose, it's like at any point now, Gerald could be sacked and I'm going to rush out and do all the graphics and we'll do a podcast and it's going to be on edge. So if we win against Forest on Monday, which we have to, it's a must win, in my opinion. You have to win that at any opportunity, whatever it takes, win at all costs. Yep. I kind of go, okay, we're kind of, whether it's papering over the cracks or what, I still think Gerald will get till the World Cup break, by the way, regardless, I think, unless we lose all seven, of course. But I think we'll do enough to get to that at least, and then you've got time to assess it if they do want to assess it. But until then, every game that we draw, you lose, you think, well, there could be a club statement drop at any moment. And it's that feeling of being on a knife edge that I don't like. And maybe that's just a work thing from our perspective. But as a fan, even, you think we're just in this limbo period of a couple of wins and Gerald stays, a couple of losses and he loses his job. And we go back to square one of going, oh, new manager, fresh start, new signings, blah, blah, blah. And it's another kind of, hopefully not a false dawn of sitting going, well, will ex-manager be the one to solve our problems? Who knows? And it's that weird feeling of limbo that I don't really like.
I don't think it's just a work perspective. It's a general thought of it's on the knife edge because, again, it's almost similar to the point I've just made of we could get a result against Forest or, whatever it is, as we have done in the last three games, but we're still in the same position of we don't really know what we're seeing. We don't know where we're going. And this could change in a matter of 2 weeks. Like, I think it's... If we avoid defeat against Forest, I believe that's our longest in beating under Gerrard. I think that's correct. I don't want to.
I think so. That's what you told me earlier, anyway. So I assume it's true.
Yeah, but then is this not one of the sort of the lowest points that some fans have sort of had in terms of that feeling towards the team at the moment and where we're going? On one hand, it's like okay, this should be the positive side. It's really not though. So that almost says everything in terms of. Yeah, you can just be getting results, but we really need to start seeing some continuity, some consistency, not in just performances, but in decisions, in a whole lot of things. So it's just difficult. And it's hard to come on and say, in the next seven games, we just need results, because that completely contradicts what I've just said. But I can't see in the next 7 weeks, it's such a tight turnaround in fixtures, of suddenly becoming a team that has a proven identity and different bits and bobs. What you really want to see from a team, I can't see us suddenly becoming that over the next 3 weeks, whatever it is. We just need results. And that isn't what I want to be saying, but it's just true. And then after that, as I say, that's Gerrard's chance to then sort of prove his worth again after 12 months. And we don't want to be chopping and changing managers, constant flux. It's really not what we want at all, because no one's going to be getting anywhere if we keep doing that. But
because I always think, like, if Gerald is sacked tomorrow, for example, and we get in, I don't know, Bruno Lage, for example, never going to happen. If that was the case, I'd almost be thinking, well, how long is it till we do the podcast saying he's been sacked? Will he get enough time to sort it? Because there's a few comments saying you've got to give Gerald time and 12 months isn't enough. But I do feel like you've got to see more than we've seen to make me definitively say, yes, he does need more time for sure. He needs another year. He needs 18 months, because football managers aren't afforded that time in the modern game, are they, to get chance to get their kind of philosophy across. Yeah. But I would like to have seen, and I would have expected to have seen more from Aston Villa in the last 12 months of a manager being in charge. I'd at least be able to say, yes, in the last seven games, we've done this, and that's why you should get another 6 months or whatever.
Unless I'm right, we can't bash it too much. When Gerrard first came in, we were playing good stuff. That game against United in the Cup, we were brilliant. Mm. We should have won that game, 3-1 or something. We have been good And it's just been the inconsistencies last season that we've had to deal with. That was always the issue. And coming into this campaign, it was more of a, if we can remain consistent and not lose to a newly promoted team on the first day, which we did, then we can be that team that is knocking on the door alongside a Newcastle or a West Ham or whoever it is in the top seven position. But we haven't been. So, you know, it's kind of black and white. Here's where we should have been. And at the moment, we're not there at all. And Gerrard admitted that himself. I'm sure he will be given time in terms of, you know, getting it right. Because again, Critchley's just come through the door too. And he is a massive part of helping Gerrard, as Michael Beale was. So, yeah, that's where we are. But at the moment, we just need results. And fans won't want to hear it. But that's where we are.
Yeah, you talked about it just a second ago, about it being kind of the lowest kind of mood or the feeling towards the fan base and the club. I've done a very crude Google Sheets form of fixtures last season versus this season. I'll just remove our names out of the way. So on the left is the 2021-22 season, and on the right is this season. Obviously, the games on the left are who we've played this season in order. On the left, the results obviously aren't in the same order. But I've gone back and gone through the same opponents from last season and compared the scorelines to this. So Bournemouth on the opening day, we lost. I compared that with Watford last season. Newly promoted, opening day, perfect comparison. Both defeats. Everton at home, won them both, same amount of points. Palace away last season, one of our better performances under Gerrard, we won 2-1. This year, lost 2-1. West Ham, 4-1 last year. I think Conte gets sent off. Bit of a rubbish game, or very rubbish game. I actually missed that one, I think. That's why I didn't remember it. Lost again this season. Arsenal, lost both, all matching so far. Man City, we lost last season. We drew this season, 1-1. So that's the first positive season in favour of this year. But the talking point where I'm going with this really comes from the bottom two there, Southampton and Leeds away, which were played in order last season and this season as well. 4-0 last season, 3-0 away, 4-0 Southampton last season, 3-0 away at Leeds last season, 7 goals scored, none conceded, 6 points. Southampton this season, 1-0, scrappy win, boring game, just about got over the line. Leeds away, boring game, 0-0 against 10 men, 4 points versus 6. So in those same opponents last year, 12 points this season, 8 points. And obviously that's the order, 8 games played, 8 points. And you just think, missed opportunities, because some of those sides aren't even that good. Everton is the one, they've improved since, so that's a good result. Looking back at it, they were poor at the time though. Yeah. Going to Palace away, you think, well, we could do what we've done last season. West Ham, at the time we're playing them, hadn't won a game, hadn't even scored a goal, I don't think. Massive missed opportunity. Bournemouth on the opening day, avoid the stupid banana skin, and we don't. That's probably their only win all season. I've been battered by Liverpool and everybody since. Man City is the best result in there, by far. It's a good result against a good team. But those bottom two, like I said, is where the talking point comes from. We've got, you know, 2 less points than we did against the same opponents last year, but those two games, Southampton and Leeds, are probably 2 of Gerrard's best. And this season we're kind of going, yeah, 1 goal scored. That's not great, is it? So it's only a 4-point difference against the same opposition, but we do all kind of feel downbeat about it.
Yeah. Almost again, as what we've just sort of mentioned, this on the face of it should be the sort of a positive sort of, I don't know, position in Gerrard's tenure, but it's just not at the moment. You need, again, that's Leeds against 10 men. And in, during those games, it's the same team that's played the year before as well, isn't it? So,
yeah.
With the only additions there are Carlos and Kamara are both out. So it's difficult. I think you had 2-1 Palace as well. It's 3-1.
My mistake.
Something to make. Yeah. It's tricky. I think, like, the comparisons, again, it's the point of we were consistent last year. We can't be that this season. And we have been. And the performances don't seem to be getting any better. But they're probably worse than where they were, certainly at parts last year. So it's just difficult. It's hard to really put your finger on where it's gone wrong as well for me. I don't know where is this sort of stemmed from. It's kind of just come about at the start of the season. The Bournemouth result really shocked us, I think. Everton, as you mentioned, I think they're really poor. And we almost threw that away. We tried our best. And then get a couple of late blows. West Ham, Arsenal, you need to hold on to that point. You know, we're not a bad team. We've got brilliant players. And that's probably the reason why we're not further down the league than where we are. That's the reason why we just got over the line against Southampton, just got over the line against Everton. If you take a few of those players out, then we probably don't go over the line in those games. And we're rooted where Forest are as well. So, yeah, that's where we are. There needs to be a big change in terms of not just performances, but you know, consistent results too. And again, four unbeaten if we avoid defeat against Forest, but that doesn't paint the picture really. As you mentioned, we kind of stumbled against Southampton and got over the line. Leeds, 10 men, and we've just got a point. And then Forest are obviously very poor at the moment. They're probably going to sack Steve Cooper this week and they could have Rafa Benitez in place for Monday. So
it's got 0-0 written all over it then.
Yeah, probably. But those are opportunities. You know, we mentioned opportunities and Monday night is an opportunity that you can't waste. That's a must win if you've ever seen it sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Seven games left till the World Cup break that we mentioned a few times. Forest, Chelsea, Fulham, Brentford, Newcastle, Man United, then Man United in the Cup. But we'll get rid of that for now because obviously we'll lose that, won't we? Third round of the FA Cup. Now we'll win it. Let's change our attitude. And Brighton is the last game before that World Cup break. So seven games. We're on 8 points per game at the moment. 8 points a game, I wish. Eight games played, 8 points. If we're on... What's 8 plus 7? 15. If we're on 15 games played, 15 points, that's a disaster. So how many points do we need from those next seven for you to sit here and it not be a disaster, effectively?
I think you've probably got to take 10 points out of it. I mean, Forest...
Yeah, where are those 10 points coming from?
Well, Forest, you need to beat Forest, easy. Brentford at home as well, you need to beat Brentford. And...
We never do well against Brentford.
And then you've got to get a win elsewhere, haven't you? Because if you're only winning two of the next seven, we're down there. So you look at Fulham, I think Fulham are missing... I'm not sure about Mitch Richards' injury. That we only played them in a couple of weeks and obviously come off injured against Newcastle. And they got battered as well. I know they're down to 10 men, but they took a good beating there. It's probably about time that they sort of come down a little bit, Fulham. I think they played really well at the start of the season, but not sure. I think you kind of take that Pelinha player out and they look poor. I know they would probably be playing against us, but Forest, Fulham and Brentford, can we target three wins there and then nick a point out of possibly Brighton away? Obviously, you have Chelsea at home, Newcastle away will be tough and United too. To be fair, I think the home games, you know, Chelsea and Man United, I know we've just said how poor we are. But
come on, John. You're not going to sit here after the last half an hour and say we're going to beat Chelsea and Man United at home.
We're done. Erling Haaland scoring like 10 goals a game. And then, to be fair, he scored once against us. But then we draw against Man City at home. And I do think that has an effect. I honestly do think the fans can get behind us against good teams. So I think we've probably got a better chance of nicking a point somewhere there than going away from home against Fulham and winning.
It suits our style of play to sit in and be compact and play on the counter, which we'll do against the better sides. So yeah, maybe you're not stupid after all. Maybe I'm the stupid one.
I think 10 points is... I say that's a minimum. I don't think we're going to get any more than that. But that has to be the target. Because if it's less than that... We're going into the World Cup and we're right down there, and then there's no positivity at all in terms of, you know, after that you'd really have to Gerrard's on sort of thin ice then, because you've got to get results after then, haven't you? So there's a need to get at least 9 points, 10 points if we can.
Yeah, I'd have said 9 points as a minimum expectation from. I mean, 9 points from seven games is.
That's where we are.
It's rubbish, isn't it, really? It's still nowhere near good enough and to getting us where we want to be. let's talk about strikers a little bit. I'm wary of the, we'll be doing another podcast later in the week and it might be you and me again, so I don't want to go over too much now that we can kind of save for later in the week. We'll talk about strikers a little bit and the lack of goals. We talked a lot about Ollie Watkins in the post-match game review on Sunday.
Yeah.
Reading a comment at the same time. There was a comment from David, so I'm going to read out now. He said, an Archer as well. We'll come on to that in a sec. He says, you spent 20 minutes talking about Archer and Watkins and not once mentioned Danny Ings, a proven Premier League goal scorer we spent 30 million on. He got 8 minutes. When does he get a chance through the middle? Maybe Gerald's got to point out your questions in regards to Archer, and we'll come on to the Archer thing in a sec. I was going to reply to that and I thought there's no point, so we'll just mention it on the podcast. But we've talked about it before, if it's the same system and it's just a light-for-light swap and it's Watkins off and Ings on, Ings can't play up front on his own.
No, and
so that's not going to work either.
No, but we are... Watkins takes a lot of slack, but he does... he gives us everything. He starts the press from the front and fans are quick to get on his back when he doesn't score a couple of goals, and granted, he probably should have. But a lot of the time, Danny Ings might not even be in that position, or just... When you watch, that sounds quite belittling, but when you really pay attention to what Watkins brings, you can't take him out of the team for Danny Ings. You just can't at the moment anyway. If you're playing both together, then I'd understand it, but then you're affecting the team elsewhere. It's a really difficult one with Ings. I mean, I've said it a few times. I question why we'd spend so much money on a player that's getting to the peak age of his career when we have Ollie Watkins, who scores double figures, probably in England, he is an England international, he's at a prime age, and he works his socks off every game and gives us everything that we need in terms of a press and, you know, being that sort of modern centre forward. So I don't know why we bought Ings, if I'm being totally honest. And I'm not saying it's a poor player at all. I love him. I think he's brilliant playing in Southampton. He couldn't stop scoring that one season. But ultimately, did we need him? I don't think we did. Would we be in a different position to where we are now?
We've barely used him, so we clearly didn't need him. You've got to play them both together. If Ings is going to play, he's got to play with another striker, or he's got to play with Watkins off him off the left or something like that. But then again, that's affecting two positions just to get Danny Ings into the side.
When we buy Danny Ings, knowing that we're probably going to have to play both up front a couple of weeks after just spending or breaking our record transfer on Emi Buendia, a couple of months later, we then pay Coutinho the highest paid wage in the club's history. What sort of strategy? Well,
this is why the title is "What is happening at Aston Villa?" Because there's so many. I said to you earlier, we've used the same phrase a few times that every game or every decision or whatever it is gives us this feeling of there's more questions than answers from that. So I said to you, what are these questions? And it said John Townley is typing for like 10 minutes, and he's like this, and we talked through most of it. But it's like, that's the thing. Something happens, and you think, well, that's affected this thing now. So if Danny Ings starts and Watkins is pushed wide, what does that mean for Buendia's future, or Bailey's, or Coutinho's?
Yeah, where's
Ramsey? Ramsey played well off the left, kind of left side, number 10. He played well further forward. What happens to him?
We've made our own problems in the last few years, and it has to change because we're going nowhere forward, only going backwards if it doesn't.
Yeah. And then the third striker, Cameron Archer. I said it on Sunday, I don't know what the point was for keeping him around. If he's not going to get minutes, he might as well have played 5 or 6 games in the Championship since and scored a couple of goals. You would argue, if we'd not heard so much from Gerrard and whoever during the summer, you'd think, oh, he must not be ready. I must have kept him around just to be in a good training ground and to be around so-called elite players rather than be in the Championship or League One and have a good time at Aston Villa. And maybe he's just not ready for it yet. But we were told all the way through about, oh, he's ready. If he's, you know, he's good enough, he'll start games or he'll feature for us. We want to keep him around. We're desperate. If you lock me in a room with Cameron Archer now, he stays. I think Gerrard said at one point, off the cuff. And we've barely seen him since, a couple of minutes here and there. Doesn't come off the bench on Sunday when we're desperate for a goal. And it's like, we're right to ask these questions. And obviously there was the kind of fallout from the post-match press conference where Ash asked about Archer to Gerrard, and Gerrard kind of bit back with a bit of a jokey answer, you know, oh, you're a mate of the family kind of thing. You've asked me about him a lot this season. You know, you're a big fan of him kind of thing. And I just wanted to make a clarification on that comment because Ash has written about it since. So I'll just read out what Ash has written in a previous story just to kind of put the Archer kind of drama in quotation marks to bed. So this is from Ash. On the topic of questions, it's fair I address the elephant in the room given the backlash that came the manager's way last night with regards to my Cameron Archer question. Gerrard, perhaps having a bit of banter, accused me of pushing an agenda and said something's going on while suggesting I'm close to his family, which is not the case in the slightest. After a wasteful display in front of goal, I wanted to get a bit more on Archer's situation given he's back from injury, as Gerrard explained on Friday. The striker didn't get on again, as we know, while Gerrard has used that playful knowing the family line before when reporters kept purring over John McGinn's form last year. However, it was the "you've asked me 25 questions this year, 19 have been on Cam Archer" point that was overly sarcastic. It was amicable between us, as it always is, with Gerrard clearly frustrated by last night's draw. "You're a fan, aren't you?" Gerrard smiled, prior to leaving, as I chirped back laughing, "he scores goals." So that was Ash's clarification on that drama. As I said, it's probably been made a bigger deal of it than it actually was, and it probably was more in jest, but when you see it written down and Gerrard's going, you're a fan of the family, like, what's going on here, it kind of looks more biting than it probably was. But I kind of come back to, and I said before we started this, it kind of comes back to the Tyrone Mings looking in the eye comment earlier on in the season, where Gerrard says something that's maybe taken out of context and becomes the talking point. And maybe that's a little bit kind of Mourinho-esque, that we're all talking about Cameron Archer, or we're all talking about Tyrone Mings losing the captaincy rather than talking about a bad result or a bad performance. But I kind of just think, well, just don't say things that might get you in trouble in the first place, and then this doesn't happen. Don't have that banter, don't have that joke, because it can be misconstrued as being a bit bitey. But the point kind of remains, we need goals. Why isn't Cameron Archer playing? I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, obviously it was completely valid from Ash, and is the question probably should have asked to the journalist probably should have asked two or three questions on it, because it's a debate, it's a topic that has to be addressed. If they haven't scored many goals, do you have a player who you've said in pre-season that will get chances and will score goals? He has done a good level last season, and then he doesn't come on the pitch when we're down to 10 men with 45 minutes remaining or whatever it was. So I'll be honest though, I'm not surprised, and that isn't a slight really on Gerrard or anything. I just didn't envisage Archer playing much this season. I just didn't. I think I wrote a piece at some point when the season started. We're not playing this two up front anymore by the looks of it. So Watkins is playing down the middle. If you need a goal, Dennings will come off the bench because he's scored probably nearly 100 Premier League goals in his career. Archer's not going to come on. If he comes on, he'll get 2 minutes at the end of a game. And then what system is that? Playing three strikers up front, that's, you know, Steve Bruce tactics. So where is he getting, where's he getting his minutes from? It doesn't surprise me. For me, I think he should have gone out on loan again because we're just sort of holding him back a little bit. He needs to get that development. I think if he went on loan to somewhere like Norwich or to work with Smith or anywhere else in the Championship, the guy would be scoring goals this season and possibly competing for the Golden Boot. So, but instead he's sort of just sitting on the bench, and I totally agree. If it's a complete valid question, obviously, and fans want to see Archer play because we know he can take those chances that Watkins missed. But for me, I just don't think Gerrard will play him because he has Ings on the bench and he's more likely to call him on than Archer. So I disagree. I think Archer should be playing more, but I'm not surprised by it.
Well, if Archer doesn't feature much in the next seven games, he should be going out on loan after the World Cup comes back. Yeah. Which again, you kind of think, well, if he goes out on loan in the Championship and scores 12 goals in the second half of the season, we're all going to be going, why wasn't he playing? What was the point of that? You kind of think, well, what we should be doing really is preparing Cameron Archer this year to really be pushing for a first team spot next year, because Dennings will probably be past it next year. And it's arguable that Ollie Watkins maybe should be replaced next summer anyway, and that he won't be the long-term future either. And you've got someone like Cameron Archer bursting through, scoring goals at England's national level. I think he's played, I saw a stat from Stata earlier, played two games, or started two games for us against Barrow and Chelsea in the Cup last year and scored four goals. And, you know, it's only a matter of time before he gets genuine actual minutes in the Premier League. Did he come on as well in a home game for like 3 minutes at the end? West Ham, yeah. What's he supposed to do during that time? I'd like to see him get half an hour. And if he floats around and think, oh, he was absolutely anonymous in there, he looked like a kid, he didn't look anywhere near ready, we'd at least go, okay, I understand why he's not playing. But while he isn't playing, it's the same thing that we see a lot. The players that don't play suddenly become the world beaters. We're all of a sudden going, this midfield's not great, get Morgan Sanson in. So, well, he's not played for 2 years basically either, so he's not this world beater. And that does happen a lot. Whoever doesn't play is kind of like the answer. But we're all kind of excited to see Cameron Archer. He looks ready in the bits we've seen. So you do sit here and scratch your head and go, well, he should be playing. But the coaching staff and Gerrard make the decisions. And if they don't think he's ready to start or play more than 3 minutes here and there, maybe he isn't ready.
Possibly not. But again, it's a question that needs to be answered, because if he's not playing, he should have gone on.
It's a question that needs to be asked, which is what Ash did. I think that's fair.
And it's a shame that you didn't get the answer that would be something that we can really work with.
Yeah. What was Gerrard's answer, just apart from, are you a mate of the family? Like, did he give an answer after that to say, well, this is the reasons why?
I think he had a couple of injury problems earlier in the season, Archer, He's jumping the bit sort of thing. So he's there and he's available, he's ready to go. But for whatever reason, Gerrard didn't bring him on, and that's fine. But yeah, in the future, maybe it would be a good one to sort of bring him in, just so we can see where he's at. Because as I say, we've only seen him for a couple of minutes in the Premier League, so we literally don't know at the moment. Mm. We've seen him in the Championship and we know he can score goals. And you can do that at any level for me. If you're finding the corners, the keeper's not saving the ball, is it? So, yeah, it's a shame, because the amount of times that Watkins would go in, you'd like just dink it over the keeper, just a little finesse over the over Melier. And how many times have we seen Archer do that and it find the back of the net? And yeah, it's a shame. But yeah, I think it would have been an ideal situation to bring him in as well, because he's got no other sort of responsibility as a Archer apart from playing on the shoulder. They're down to 10 men. That, you know, there was no other, there's nothing for him to do apart from wait for that chance, and if he gets it, he probably takes it. So it was a shame that he didn't get on the pitch.
If he's come back from injury, that's fair enough. But you know, you'd like to think that another couple of, Sunday to Monday is the gap between the two games. I would like to maybe see him against Forest a little bit, 10 minutes, 15 minutes against Forest, to see what he can do. But let's kind of get to Forest as and when it happens. Like I said, we'll be doing another podcast later in the week where we'll touch on Forest a little bit more. But I think we both agree it's a must win, don't we? But pretty much everyone in the comments agrees that it should just one come through. If we don't get 3 points against Forest, then he has to be sacked 100%. which, yeah, to a certain extent, I don't know whether I do agree with that, actually. So I'd say, yeah, I agree with that 100%, but I'm not sure whether I do. But, yeah, if you lose to bottom of the league, it's not a good look, is it, when you're already having a poor season?
Yeah, you know, again, it just kind of just adds to the fire, doesn't it, in terms of where we're going. We're not even getting results at this point, let alone putting in the performances that we need to be seeing. So Gerrard scrapped his sort of creativity or whatever he was trying to do beforehand that wasn't quite working. Again, that's fine, should we be honest about it. But then you need to back it up with performances and results. We've had a couple of results. We got a draw against City, win against Southampton. Didn't get the result against Leeds because of the circumstances that we should have. So Nottingham Forest, sorry, at the City ground. We need to get 3 points. There's no ifs or buts about it. You have to. They're in dire straits. That's a team that are worse than Bournemouth at the moment. And although we lost to Bournemouth.
That's just fun to say. Yeah.
They're just a squad that have been put together. There's 22 players there. Steve Cooper's the manager at the moment. He probably won't be. I worry for Forest anyway. I think that it's a bit of a shame because they've waited so long to come back in the league and then sort of ruined it in a way by signing so many players. Don't have an identity at all. I don't think they know what they're doing. So if we're losing to a team that barely knows each other, that is a massive problem for many reasons.
That'd be a huge red flag. Yeah.
Well, if you don't beat them, you need to beat Nottingham Forest. Leicester put 4 past them and kept a clean sheet, and that's a Leicester team who have been losing every week, like 6-2 or 6-3. So, you need 3 points. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that a little bit. I think the podcast, the next one we do will be Thursday or Friday. Just had a note from Ash at the press conference, I think it's Thursday, he said. So we'll either do like a Forest preview later in the week, or we'll do this fan phone-in thing and we'll talk about Forest a little bit throughout that, I'd imagine. Just a reminder for those that maybe didn't catch the start of this, we're doing a fan phone-in podcast next. There's a number that you can send a video of yourself asking a question or a voice note. Voice note is absolutely fine. I've had about 6 or 7 so far, and I'd like at least 10 to make a decent episode out of it. Number is 07920245162. So send a voice note or video yourself asking a question or giving your opinion on a talking point or whatever it is. We'll play them in the episode, react to them, answer any questions you've got. John, it might be you and me, because Ash is off for the rest of the week, I've just seen. So we'll probably be talking about the same kind of stuff again. But if I can get 10 different voices in, it'll at least freshen up a little bit. So do get involved with that if you want to. John, thanks for your time this afternoon. Do appreciate it. We've had a good little chat there, and it's always nice to have a bit of a debrief and a therapy session. So hopefully you've enjoyed it. And hopefully you've enjoyed it too if you're watching along or listening later after the live episode. As I said, we'll be back on Thursday or Friday, so keep an eye out for that. And then we'll react to the Monday night football next weekend, where it's going to be a massive 3 points for Aston Villa and a 6-0 win or something. So thanks everyone for your time. Thanks, John. And we'll see you again in a few days.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, up the Villa.